We're always ready for a debate in our culture about nature versus nurture or destiny versus self-determination. We certainly come into the world within a frame of reference, but we can do much to alter that frame or simply walk out of it. Today's guest talks about finding ourselves on our own terms, not leaving the job of defining ourselves to somebody else. His book is called Your Defining Moments, but there's a re in parentheses before defining, so we'll call it Your Redefining Moments. The subtitle is Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. Dennis Merritt Jones is a veteran of the Human Potential Movement. He's a teacher, keynote speaker, and author several times over. He's a regular columnist for the Huffington Post, in addition to his frequent postings on his own website. Dennis, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You write, again, the subtitle is Becoming Who We Were Born to Be. That itself will stir up lots of questions. Let us know where you are in believing in destiny and our ability to alter it.
Well, I think that those are two questions, you know, our destiny and our ability to alter it. I think our destiny is predetermined by our deepest belief system. And when we couple that with the awareness that we came here literally, in my belief, hardwired to the moment we were born to be a unique expression of life, but too often we lose sight of who we were born to be because the world shapes us in its image, which is from the outside in rather than the inside out.
You obviously put in some time and effort in finding the true self. I mean, is that the same as the original self? Is the true self going to be somewhat different from what you, the basic set of things you got coming into the world?
I think that those terms are interchangeable. When I think of the original self, I think of the original that point of origination of life itself, that with the great you know, the Big Bang, infinite intelligence. You can connote it to a spiritual reality or just a scientific reality. But in the beginning, there was this life force that just thought itself into being, and the only way that it could express and to know itself is to clothe itself in form, which is you and I and every living thing. And so the true self is another word for that, but the authentic self is that point within each of us where that original self, the universal I am, individuated itself. And the minute that we were born, we knew who that was, and it was to be uniquely expressed as in no other living thing. See, there's no need, the universe has no need for redundancy, two of anything exactly the same. So every living thing is imbued with a unique way of being, but we've forgotten how to be it because we've forgotten who we truly came here to be.
So it's really about making sure that we realize our full potential, doing everything that we are capable of doing with the gifts we have.
Yeah, oh yeah. And of course that means discovering the gifts. And sometimes, as I said before, the world defines itself from the outside in, and we have a tendency to do the same thing. And when we define ourselves, you know, from the outside in, we cover over the gifts that we came here to share because we're trying to live up to the expectations of what the world wants us to be rather than who we came here to be.
Well, when we talk about things like discovering gifts, though, I mean, that involves a certain amount of measurement from the outside, doesn't it? I mean, other people assessing what skills or talents you have?
Well, yeah, except that when you're in touch with your passion, when you're in touch with the truth of who you are, what you came here to be and who you came here to be will find its way to the surface of your life, irrespective of what the world says about you or thinks you should be. And that's the problem. We try to live up to the expectations of what the world thinks we should be rather than who we came here to be. And when we access that unique, you know, element of who we are that has been so deeply buried because we've been mesmerized by what goes on the surface of life, I refer to it as horizontal living, where life happens in the five sensory world. And we forgot that there's a vertical aspect of us that when we take time to plunge vertically into that deepest awareness of ourself, capital S, that place where the original self has individuated itself, we access that life force in such a way that we bring it back to the surface of life on the horizontal plane and integrate it, literally, as corny as it sounds, bringing our being into our doing.
That particular practice you just mentioned is going to fascinate some people, I'm sure. This idea of plunging into yourself. I mean, what and how does one go about that?
Well, there's a number of practices. You know, I'm a strong proponent of mindfulness, and mindfulness is the practice of bringing. People will notice, your body is always present moment. Your body can't be any place other than the present moment. But where is our minds a lot of the time? They're either out in front of us in the future or dragging behind us in the past. And so mindfulness is the practice of bringing our thinking mind back into our body in the moment, in the present moment, which is where all creation takes place. So mindfulness is a practice in and of itself, and it can be incorporated into everything we do in our daily lives. But you have to be awake, you have to be aware. And there's techniques such as breathing, meditation. Self-inquiry is a powerful practice to plunge vertically into the depth of who you came here to be.
It's interesting we have you on today because we had Karen Mizen Miller, a Zen Buddhist priest, on last week talking about mindfulness in her garden and the fact that the garden is not a metaphor for life, it is life. What's in front of you? It's a real thing about staying in the present moment. We'll talk more with Dennis Merritt Jones. His book is Your Redefining Moments, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. We'll take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join our discussion. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Dennis and you in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dennis Merritt Jones, a veteran of the Human Potential Movement, teacher, keynote speaker, and author, and his latest book is called Your Redefining Moments, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about finding our best selves, really. Join us at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Dennis, I hope I didn't make it cringe just now when I said your best self, because it's really an Oprah term, but is there some interchangeability with the various ideas about becoming the full you?
Well, I think the term best self is a relative term, because best is all a matter of your own perspective, you know. But when you can sublimate that idea into your highest self or your true self, it's without boundaries, it's without limits, because when we really come down to the finest element of who we are, we're an individuation of something that is infinite, without limited potential. Without limited potential, which means that we can access as much of that true self that we are as we choose to by living consciously, mindfully, and, for lack of a better term, spiritually anchored in the present moment. And as much as we can access that, we can bring that much of our potential to the surface of life and incorporate it into our daily lives. And it is a practice of living mindfully, openly, willingly, courageously, and faithfully, knowing that you're not here by mistake. That's something that I really try to emphasize with my audiences, is that you're not here. There's no mistakes. You're not here by happenstance. You're here because you have come here to bring an element of creative expression that no other living thing on the planet can do.
The idea of mindfulness just in general, I wonder if, I mean, you must run across a fair number of people who say, well, you know, I tried it. It just doesn't really work for me. It's. I mean, a lot of people just tend to do what's around them. It's more of a reaction than an action, isn't it?
Yeah, that's because they're living, again, the metaphor on the horizon, the surface of life, where they're subject or they're subjectifying themselves to the what's happening. They look at life as this is happening to them rather than through them. That's probably the best way to look at it. And when we're allowing ourselves to be affected by what's going on around us, it tends to shape us and define us. Whereas if we can kind of pull back into ourselves and reconnoiter, if you will, with the truth of who we are, we live from that truth, and it changes our actions, our behavior in our daily lives. It's a hard thing to do. There's no question that if everybody could live mindfully and authentically, everybody would be walking around with big smiles on their faces and fully expressed and joyful. And by the way, following your bliss in that pattern, you'll end up doing what you came here to do, and the universe will support you in doing it in a generous way. But we're afraid to do that.
It involves a journey, obviously, and you do talk about specific pilgrimages early in the book. For those of us who can't get to Santiago de Compostela, this is a process we have to take internally then.
Right. Yeah, one of the metaphors that I use in the book is that masters from antiquity have taken that sacred pilgrimage, if you will, to the mountaintop, you know, whether that's metaphorical or literal, where they would retreat to the silence, where they would pull themselves away from what I refer to as the spiritual amnesia that happens on the surface of life, and they would reconnect with that original self, and they kind of rinse themselves clean of the forgetfulness of who they really are. But they would always come back down the hill and reintegrate with life and bring the gift of themselves back into the relative experience. For us, rather than going to the mountaintop, we can take that same sacred sojourn, if you will, but it's that vertical plunge that I'm talking about, that we take time to go within, to access that deepest place within ourselves where that inherent authentic self lives, and wash away again the spiritual amnesia that this is rampant on the surface of life and in the five sensory experience, and bring through silence, through meditation, through just a remembrance of who we are that may stand and rub against what the world thinks we should be or who we are, and bring that back into our daily lives and live from that place authentically. It changes our reality, but we can't stay at that place deep within us. We have to bring it back to the surface and incorporate it into our daily lives, which is where the practice of mindfulness comes in.
All right, so you're not advocating navel gazing or getting so lost in your... In other words, you're not going to get so lost in yourself that you can't come back. I mean, you have to bring the knowledge out with you.
Right. You can't bliss out. It's about, again, it's the balance of realizing, again, bringing your beingness into your doingness. And when we're willing to do that, you know, Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss, you know. And when we're willing to tap into what makes us happy, and we begin to live from that place of authenticity, and being who we came here to be brings with it opportunities. When we're willing to stand in who we are, and doors open magically, it seems, to support us when we're being who we came here to be. But, you know, too many of us, Jeff, we define ourselves based on external elements such as our physical bodies. How many of us define who we are based on what we see in the mirror? You know, our gender, our the size of our body, you know, the color of the body.
I am the can in which I inhabit.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and so when we define ourselves from the outside in, we're automatically restricting the possibilities of being who we came here to be. Because you're not your body, no more than your automobile. What is your body? Your body is nothing more than a biodegradable, carbon-based, disposable vessel that your soul rides around.
You brought us right down to earth there, didn't you?
and at the appropriate time, you know, the soul essentially ejects, and the body goes back into the elements from which it came, as the soul does too, into it, the ethers from which it came. But in that journey between the time we get here and the time we leave the planet, we forget who we are. And so the book is really about the journey back to who you were the moment you were born and reaccessing the awareness of who that is and living in it. Because the minute we were born, we began getting covered over with labels.
I want to skip ahead in the book just a bit to the hero's journey, because you did just mention Joseph Campbell and him talking about following your bliss. This started you on something of a hero's journey, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bliss. Joseph Campbell in college, he reading his stuff really cracked me open. Yeah, I was living from, you talk about living from the outside in, I was a marketing major in college. And I clearly was not cut out to be that. And one day in a philosophy class, I heard about following your bliss, and I started to explore what that meant. And it really means doing what causes you to be the most happy in your daily life. And in that process, I discovered myself changing majors to study music, because that's where I found my passion to be. And as I was willing to live in that place, and I became a full-time musician, it changed my life. And I look back at those times when I struggled to shape myself into really what my father was, which was a marketing executive. I found myself living from that space of the outside in, based on who I thought at the time my dad thought I should be.
Dennis Merritt Jones, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Your Redefining Moments, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. Join our discussion on the Exchange as we talk about taking that plunge into ourselves to find out the good parts and making sure that we apply them in daily life. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dennis Merritt Jones.
Hello. I love what you're saying. You're speaking my language, and I haven't heard many people speak it in so long. I grew up in the 70s, and there was a human potential movement, and I was wondering if you know what happened to it, and I'll give you a little bit of my background, because I saw it gradually disappearing. Being a private music educator, I had students one-on-one, and in using your language here, I was able to keep them going more vertical with themselves and their development to master the instrument and who they are as a master performing the music. So, but I saw the schools and everything keeping them more conforming into this horizontal experience, and in my years of learning about how this process happens, it's just, I wonder how you address this dilemma that we are born into the world and we get immediately programmed because our minds are so pliable, and then, you know, it's like the sooner we learn who we are, we can live more powerfully and affect more change. Like, this is so much of what is needed to undo the way our world has become, you know, and to redesign it.
Yeah, we have become mesmerized. We've become mesmerized by the world's idea of what life is. And again, we live in a time where we have become more and more forgetful of who we really are because of the what's going on the surface of life has so much drama attached to it that it seduces us into thinking that we're part of that drama rather than an observer of it.
Well, which raises the question, and thank you, Julie, for your call very much, about defining and redefining moments. Are these necessarily moments of stress or trials by fire or something else that hammers us?
That's really a good question. Defining moments or redefining moments, any moment can be a redefining moment because if you think about it, within whatever moment you happen to be in, within that moment lies the opportunity to be changed by what we see and experience, if we're willing to look deeply enough into that moment and remember, come back to an awareness of that authentic self that lives at the core of our being. Redefining moments offers an opportunity to literally perpetually reinvent ourselves. And you know what, as long as you live in a human skin, there'll be opportunities like that will continue to present themselves to us. Every moment has the potential to be a redefining moment when we use the opportunity to look more deeply into the authentic self within and learn how to actualize its qualities. Again, it's bringing that being into our doing. Any moment we can redefine who we are. But the practice, Jeff, is to be so mindfully present in the moment that we can witness the portal, if you will, to that authentic self that lies within and step through that portal knowing it is offering us an opportunity to redefine who we are based on what we find within ourselves rather than what's happening in the world around us.
I want to step back just a bit to the first part of Julie's question, because she was asking about what happened to the human potential movement, and it was your own bio on the book flap that says that you've been involved in the human potential movement for a long time, the majority of your life. I mean, she seems to think it's gone away. You're still part of it?
I think it's finding a new voice. I mean, the human potential movement, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, there's spokespeople from every generation that show up to be the voice of it. And if you look today, I think you'll find it in people such as Eckhart Tolle, you know, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra. There's always going to be those who are going to be present in our lives to help us rediscover our potential if we're willing to look at ourselves as something more than just a human being.
Let us take another call. We have Mark in Redding on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dennis Merritt Jones. His book is Your Redefining Moments.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
Do you have any thoughts on the quote attributed to one of the popes? I believe it was a Gregory that, give me a boy until he is six and he shall be mine forever.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times we're so shaped by the opinions of others. You know, we've defined ourselves in limiting ways based on our history and the opinions of others and the input of others. How many of us have defined our lives based on who we're not rather than who we are, based on the input of other people? You know, or the experiences that we had that they helped create in our lives. And we live from those experiences and those deepest beliefs because we don't know any better, because those beliefs have settled deeply into our consciousness. You know, if you could excavate your unconscious mind, you'd find beliefs about yourself in there that simply are not the truth. But we live from them as if they are the truth because there was some experience that we might have had that shaped it to appear to be the truth about who we were in that moment. But it's not the truth of who we are.
We get into the realm of unknown unknowns here, to paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, I guess. The fact that it's hard to have a greater context than the one you start with, to be able to realize that maybe the assumptions you make about yourself and your world are not even necessarily correct in the eyes of a lot of other people in the world.
Yeah.
So what do you do about that?
Well, we wake up one of two ways. My friend Michael Beckwith says, you know, we're pulled to the edge of change, of conscious evolution, through either inspiration or desperation. We're pulled by a vision or we're pushed by pain. And too many of us wait until we're on the edge of change, pushed there by change and desperation, rather than being inspired to step into a larger idea of who we are.
Well, all right. So if we're looking for ways to get a better context, a better, you know, like to improve ourselves, to get some idea of, you know, who the true us is, talk down the squeamish, though. Is the process going to be painful or embarrassing, Dennis?
Well, it requires courage. You know, it requires courage. I mean, a lot of us, we fear standing in the truth of who we are because of the concern of rejection. We want to be. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to fit in. Everybody wants to be accepted and approved of, and that's part of the problem, is that we've sold a part of our souls because we want to be loved and approved of. And there's a big difference between trying to fit in your tribe as opposed to belonging in your tribe. And too many of us sacrifice a part of ourselves because we have to shape ourselves to fit into a pre-existing idea of what we should be, rather than stepping into where the tribe or whatever environment we're in, bringing the gift of who we are, you know, to that environment.
But ultimately, for the truly brave, or maybe not. I mean, for some people, the answer is going to be, oh wait, this isn't my tribe. This is not the tribe I feel like I belong with.
That's right, and that's when you have to cut yourself, you know, break away, and that's hard. It's hard to walk away from people who at some level they've created some aspect of your life that you've found safety and comfort in, and yet there's also limitations and that come with that. Standing on your own, being willing to stand in the face of those, and you know, oftentimes it's those we are the closest to that we love and share our lives with that we bend over the most to. And I say that in a way of compromising ourselves. Because we're afraid of being rejected by them. And yet that's part of the pathway, is learning to endure the criticism and rejection of others in order to find yourself.
Well, I think that's a partial answer to the next question I'm going to ask, which is that you point out in the book, we may hear the call to seek our true selves, but we don't heed it. And it sounds like this is one of the things that stops us, is the desire to make sure that we're still pleasing the people around us.
Absolutely. Well, we want, as I said, we want to be loved. We want to be approved of. And Oftentimes that's why people stay in abusive relationships, is because there's some certainty there. They can count on a certain amount of attention, whether it's negative or positive. And stepping away from that, they have to step into the unknown, where they get a chance to define who they are based on their own authority and experiences, rather than being the victim of somebody else's treatment.
So it's cutting the tether, really. It's just saying, okay, I'm going to float loose now and see where I really do belong, and that's a tough one for a lot of people.
Yeah, which is why the spiritual anchor is so important.
All right, we'll talk about spiritual anchor and what that means when we come back from our break. Dennis Merritt Jones is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is Your Redefining Moments, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. We'll come back and talk more with Dennis and take more of your phone calls and emails here on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dennis Merritt Jones, calls himself a veteran of the Human Potential Movement. Actually, I do the term veteran, but he's part of the Human Potential Movement. Teacher, keynote speaker, author several times over. His latest book is Your Redefining Moments, re in parentheses. Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. We're talking about digging down into ourselves and figuring out who the people we are meant to be are. Join us on the Exchange as we talk about this element of human potential. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we're just talking about the fact that you may decide, once you've really gone down inside yourself and figured out, okay, this is the real me, that the real me is in an artificial environment, as you did with marketing. This is not my place. These are not my people. So you were just talking about the concept of the spiritual anchor that helps you figure this process out. Go, walk through that with us, please.
Well, we were a spiritual being before we were a human being. And again, the whole process of redefining moments is you don't have to discover who you were born to be, because it's already there. You have to remember it. And it's about going back to that point in time where your soul self, your individuated essence of the one, if you will, took a human form, and continually come back to remembering that that is the core of your true definition of who you are, not who the world says you are. You know, when you're living from your authentic self, which is that spiritual anchor, there are seven elements, and there's a whole chapter dedicated to this in the book. There's seven intrinsic qualities that will arise into your daily life when you're living from that authentic self, which is spiritually anchored. And if I can give what those seven elements are, perhaps you'd like to talk about them.
Sure.
The first intrinsic quality that will show up when you're living from your authentic self is a sense of wholeness. Wholeness is just a knowing that there's nothing missing in your life. It's an intrinsic quality that you were the moment you were born. You'll also live with a sense of reverence, which means being able to see beyond all form the presence of this original self that we each are individuated. You'll also live from a place of fearlessness, because you'll know all fear is attached to a loss, concern of loss of some kind. And when you're living from the authentic self, see, the authentic self doesn't know fear, because it's not attached to the concern of loss and the health and the relative experience, the human condition. You'll also experience integrity. You'll experience non-attachment, or you may think of it as humility, where we are letting go of the need to feel that we are either superior or inferior to others. And you'll experience equanimity, which is a sense of being aware of being in balance, whether you're being swayed by the opinions of the world, or whether you can find a neutral place between yourself and the opinions of the world. But mostly, you'll also operate from a sense of love. When you're living from your authentic self, the inherent quality of love will filter in through everything that you say, think, and do.
So wholeness, reverence, fearlessness, integrity, non-attachment or humility, equanimity,
right,
and love.
Right.
It's an impressive list. I want to come back, though, because when you talk about our soul self, I mean, I hear concepts like reincarnation perhaps in here. And I know this is not a specifically religious sort of book, mm-hmm. but I mean, is that a belief that you have?
Well, you know, I think the jury's still out on reincarnation. And my perspective on reincarnation is it doesn't really matter. I know that may sound flippant, but here's my logic around that. If there is reincarnation, you know, then you certainly want to create good karma to take with you, right? And if there isn't reincarnation, and when you leave here, the lights just go out, don't you want to leave knowing that you did your best, you know, that you contributed something while you were here? So whether there's reincarnation or not, I think that as soul beings, and I do tend to lean toward the idea that we take who we are with us into some other dimension, to continue the unfolding of the journey back to the wholeness from which we came. But whether it's reincarnation or not is not really the question. The question is, can we live up to our highest possibility of being who we came here to be while we're in this human skin? And if there is, great, we take that positive element with us. If there's not, we left the planet a better place than it was when we got here, and I think that's why we're here.
There really is an element of ego divestiture in here, then. It's like I'm going to be the best whatever this is I am right now, rather than identifying yourself by name or, you know, this guy,
you
know, whatever. It's really just like I'm going to be this best person.
Yeah, that's well said, Jeff. The ego thinks its job is to keep us on the horizon, on the surface of life. It does not want to allow us to take that vertical plunge into to the deeper self, because when we're there, the ego loses all power, all control over us. Because it lives on the surface. It's a surface dweller. It thrives on the five sensory experience.
So I guess then this really gets down to when the book is called Your Redefining Moments, can you make a redefining moment or a defining moment, or do you just need to let them happen?
Yeah, you don't have to make them. Here's the hook. Every moment before you is a redefined moment. If you're conscious enough to be present in it, and open to the experience in the moment, because if you are, it'll open a portal for you to reconnect with that original self. Whether you're standing in line at the bank, whether you're mowing the lawn, whether you're changing the baby's diapers or making love to your significant other, it doesn't matter what you're doing in the moment. What redefining moments do is they open a space in awareness where we connect in that moment with a sense of something larger than ourselves. We reconnect with that original self, which is infinitely larger than we are. And so it's an awareness. I'll tell you, one of the greatest redefining moments I had was standing in the delivery room the day my daughter was born. Because I went into that experience with all kinds of labels on me, and that I'd already placed on her before she got here.
Huh.
I'd walked it through the delivery room door, labels like father, provider, protector, you know, softball coach, and the labels went on and on and on. But the minute that doctor put her in my arms and I looked into her eyes, all of those labels fell away. All of those labels fell away. And even the ones I had placed on her that I predetermined who she was going to be fell away, because I looked in her eyes and I connected with that place she just came from, which was that infinite allness of life before it took on the form and the conditions of the human elements. And in that moment, I had an awareness that she and I were going to have a journey together through life, sharing an awareness of that same oneness that we came from. That was a redefining moment. I left that delivery room a different person than I walked in.
How old is she now? I'm curious.
She's 29.
Were there moments when you thought you weren't going to complete this journey together?
Well, we'll see. I don't know. But she's,
I'm just
amazing.
Asking about the teen years in particular.
Yeah. That was an interesting time too. But that's an example of a wonderful moment. There's also mm-hmm. redefining moments that can happen in the challenging moments when we're most challenged by what's going on the surface of life. Any one of those moments, if we're conscious and present in the moment, we're able to access an awareness so that we're part of something much larger than ourselves. It can change our experience. It may not change the thing that's going on, but it'll change our experience of it, because we're looking at it through new eyes.
Whether it lifts you up or crushes you down, the fact is
right.
It's a defining moment.
Right on.
Let us take a call from Liz in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dennis Merritt Jones. His book is Your Redefining Moments.
Oh, thank you so much. The point I wanted to bring up, a couple of points, is when those moments happen, you may not realize that that is the redefining moment.
Amen.
In retrospect, it's like, oh, I was supposed to move to Oregon or to Ashland. Oh, my goodness, I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing. But I know one of mine was when I went through EST in the 70s, and it was the first time I started looking to myself for approval instead of to my father.
Yes.
And
yes.
The business that I run, we try to live by the four agreements, which I think are an impeccable way to run a business. You know, it's sometimes hard to stick to them, but they are.
But Liz, you hit a great point, is that oftentimes you're not aware that you had to redefine a moment until you have a chance to find stillness and reflect on that moment. It could be a minute later or 10 years later, but you'll become aware in that moment that you had a reconnection with something larger than yourself. So you're absolutely right. It can
happen.
The awareness of it can happen after the fact. So good point.
All right. Thanks for that, Liz. Appreciate it. We're talking to Dennis Mayer Jones here on the Jefferson Exchange. Got a few minutes left if you'd like to join us. There's a whole process here that you go through. It's asking who you are. And it was this, you touched on it just a second ago, but this idea of stripping the labels away. And there's this whole list that you put in the book. You know, who am I? Well, I'm this. You know, okay, well, what else?
Right.
Is essentially what you keep doing there.
Yeah. Self-inquiry is like peeling the onion. And while we can start out, with the absolute answer, which is, well, I am an individuation of the authentic self or the original self, that's kind of a cop out. In order to really reach it, you have to go through the layers of opinions that you hold that you think define who you are, and the list can go on forever if you're willing to sit in self inquiry. Who am I? Well, I'm a man. Who am I? Well, I'm a father. Who am I? Well, I'm a brother. Who am I? I'm a son. Who am I? I'm a musician. Who am I? You know, I'm a writer. We can peel away all the labels until we get down to the center of the onion, and the last who am I is, well, I am an element, an individuation of an expression of life, God, the universe, however you want to define that. But we have to be willing to stand and peel away those labels, and in the process we'll realize of how much we have allowed the world to define who we are. And we live from that belief because we haven't really stopped and challenged those beliefs enough to change them. And we can change our beliefs as soon as we identify that we're thinking from a place that is not serving us or our world in a healthy way.
You know, once you get past this session of self-inquiry here, you talk about high involvement and low attachment. What does that mean?
Well, high involvement and low attachment is a wonderful practice. It means being highly involved in the moment of whatever's going on, whatever it is, to be fully present in it, bringing your doing into your being, or bringing your being into doing. I guess it works both ways, but with a low attachment to the results of it. That's how the creative process works. Anybody who's a writer or a musician or in the creative elements, they know that when they are totally diving in and involved in the process, they're not attached to how it's going to turn out. They're not attached to the result of it. And what if we could live our lives so fully engaged in the moment that we're not attached to what people think, how things are going to end up, that we're so involved in the process of being that we are experiencing the authentic self to the degree that it really becomes the process or becomes the element by means of which we live our lives and define ourselves by. High involvement, low attachment. To live from the authentic self, you have to be highly involved in the process, in the moment, that vertical plunge, with a low attachment to what it looks like on the surface of life.
You know, I have to admit, of all the possibilities of personalities to talk about and case studies to bring into the book, Jim Carrey is probably the last person I would have expected to find in your redefining moments. Why is he in here?
Well, because he's a great example of somebody who's willing to redefine himself as his career and his life evolved. And Jim Carrey has a unique brand of talent. Whether you like him or not, you have to admit he is himself, and he brings the full cadre of who he is into what he does. And a lot of people love it, and a lot of people don't like it. But it hasn't changed him from bringing the gift of who he is to the planet. And as a result, he has been immensely rewarded in every way. And he is now actually connected in life in an even larger way. And he's part of the human potential movement now. His consciousness has arrived at the awareness of his bringing his true being, his creative genius, into the the doing part of life, and he's affecting other people in positive ways.
We got about a minute and a half left. Let's take a call from Annie in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dennis Merritt Jones.
Good morning. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in December, and before my surgery in January, I had the opportunity during a late night pondering, as it were, to be directly downloaded, I might say, with the very complete impression that I was on a new assignment to show people how to walk transition and how to deal with adversity with joy and humor and to look at all the blessings. And I have been put in situations just, you know, within minutes of being able to minister to other women and to just demonstrate to the people who are in my sphere of influence how to live a life that all of a sudden takes a turn. It's been absolutely amazing.
Right.
Annie,
what you just described is that you're clear enough that you're not allowing your condition of your body to define who you are, and that radiance is showing through to other people in a positive way. So good for you.
Annie, thanks so much for that, and thanks for being able to squeeze it in before the end here. The book is called Your Redefining Moments, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. Dennis Merritt Jones is the author. He's been our guest today. You can find him at dennismerrittjones.com. Dennis, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Sure.